I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Once again, it's good to be here. And anyway, what's on your mind today?
Well, every now and then we've talked about the need to appoint a good property manager. And you even told our listeners what they should expect when they do that. However, I thought it might be worthwhile if you were to scope the type of questions that need to be posed in order to select the best property manager.
That's an interesting question, Ken, because as you can appreciate, having been in and around commercial property for the past 40 years or so, I just know intuitively who are the good property managers for the different types of property. So I don't go through a formal process, and with my clients, I will generally make a recommendation of one, maybe two appropriate property managers, and in most cases, they will accept my recommendation. But I understand your question, and what I need to do is to perhaps give you some criteria. The place I would start would be establishing their credentials. And you do this whole thing is done by way of an interview process. And you might have, by virtue of word of mouth or your own observation, decided who is going to be on your short list, which may be one, two, or three property managers. And you'll generally pick that by the firm, although it's important once you start to delve deeper that you build a rapport or have a good feeling about the actual property manager who will be handling your property on a day-to-day basis. So, as I said, you start with credentials, and probably the first question you would ask is, what type of properties do you specialise in, and what do you feel your strengths are? And it's important here that you don't lead them on that. You just let them ask the question and just wait and just see what they come up with, because the properties they specialise in shouldn't be too difficult, but you'll find that sometimes they haven't even looked upon strengths that they have in a way that they can articulate them. So it'll be an interesting question to ask and to observe the answer. So having established that, probably your next question would be, and how many office suites or how many square meters of my type of property do you currently manage? Now, if they're strata title, obviously they're suites that we talk about, but if it is standalone buildings or whole floors of space, they will be talking in area, in other words, square meters. So again, just let them explain to you how it is that they will be a good fit and be able to properly look after your particular property. And then perhaps another question in the credentials area would be, what are the addresses of all of those properties that you currently manage that are most like mine? Now, it's important that you don't allow them to hand-pick the list. You just want a good cross-section. It may not be every property, but you want a good cross-section by way of age and location, so that you can drive around and randomly pick from the list in your area so that it can give you an idea of the properties that they manage. Now, you know, sometimes you're going to arrive at a property and from the outside it may not look, you know, as schmick as you would like. Now, that may not necessarily mean the property manager is lax. It may well mean that you have a Scrooge for an owner, and that owner is not allowing the managing agent to do his job properly. Now, if that were mine, I'd put up for that for a little while, But after it gets to a point where clearly it's a poor reflection on you as the managing agent, I would probably fire that owner and get rid of them, because it's not in your best interest as a managing agent to having to be always got a cap in hand to the owner because he just won't allow you to spend money. The tenant gets upset. The relationship sours. It's just not a good working basis to go forward on. So establishing credentials, they're probably the three main questions.
Okay. After you've established their credentials, what's next?
Well, after you have established the credentials from the point of view, you've now decided who it is you want to make part of your consulting team, the next area you want to look at is things like training, ongoing training. Do they provide for their staff, or does the company provide for the people within the property management department? I mean, continuing ongoing education is essential for a property manager to be up to speed. And this involves things like being aware of legislative changes, new construction methods, new materials, I mean, like the energy-saving lightings. I mean, everything is looking for, you know, get as close to a five-star rating as you can with air conditioning and lighting and hydraulics and things like that. So it's a continual learning process, and that's probably why I no longer get involved that intimately with property management as such, because you have to be doing it day in, day out to keep abreast. That doesn't mean I don't understand the broad concept and can pick a good property manager, but just the day-to-day details, sometimes the people who are closest to the property actually know more. In other words, they may not be the senior people, it may be some of the junior ones. So quite often what I tend to do is talk to the senior people on strategy, but happily deal with the junior staff on the day-to-day components and things involved with the management of the property, because they are at the coalface and can give you a better feedback. But you still want to know that there's good training going on. And I suppose related to that is, can they provide you at this early stage before you've actually settled on the property, assuming you bought it and you're now in that settlement period and lining up your property manager, can they provide you with some documentation, a sort of marketing plan? Although ideally the property is leased, so it's not a matter of finding a tenant, but provide you with a resume for the company, some pro forma reporting that they provide each month, so that you can package something up and provide it to your finance broker to give to the lender, just so that strengthens your case when sorting out your finance, that the lender knows that you're not going to be managing it yourself, that you've got, you know, a good, competent, well-established, well-respected property manager handling everything on your behalf, so that they feel confident that the tenant's going to pay their rent on time, and if there are any issues that might arise, that they can be quickly solved.
I imagine how they obtain and screen the right tenant would be a rather important consideration for you as a landlord.
Yeah, you're right. Obtaining and screening tenants is a key issue. As I said, hopefully when you bought the property it is tenanted, but you know, leases fall due and you need to find replacement tenants. And so you want to know what their procedure is, partly the marketing, but also the screening of tenants. And that means how they go about establishing their credit history and their performance. And also, when a tenancy comes in, whether it's a good fit for your building. This is probably more relevant for retail property, but sometimes the location, may even for offices, may not be the right location for that type of business. And you can also obtain from the tenant quite often they might have a business plan or projections which they're happy to divulge, particularly at the point where they are wanting to lease the space. Once they've finalised the lease, they're less likely to be forthcoming with that sort of information. But, you know, you want to know, in the area where your property is located, does that sort of business fit well? Will they be guaranteed of customers? Because if they're not, therefore, they might have trouble in paying the rent. And unlike residential leases, which are 6 to 12 months, most commercial leases are 3 to 10 years. So you're going to have a long-term relationship with that tenant, and you need to make sure that it's going to be a firm and solid basis to proceed forward. Now, one of the ways around that, all that investigative work, is if the tenant is prepared to stump up a reasonable bank guarantee. And by reasonable, I mean, depending, for a 3-year lease, probably 3 months is probably fine. But once you get to 5 or more, I would go for at least a 6-month bank guarantee. The longer the lease, the longer the bank guarantee, because the greater your exposure. So, you know, if it was an 8 to 10 year lease, you'd probably seek a 12-month guarantee, bank guarantee. Now, what's important here, though, is that sometimes the longer the lease, the larger the tenancy, you may end up with a public company, in which case they may not be prepared to provide you with that lengthy bank guarantee. They may say, look, their performance is public knowledge, and you make your judgment on that. But more often than not, particularly if the directors then are off the hook, because you're not going to have personal guarantees at the same time as a bank guarantee, but you don't want personal guarantees, because invariably all the assets are in the spouse's name anyway and hidden away. So you really want a bank guarantee. And one of the blogs we covered recently talked about the importance of making sure that's worded properly. And I know that HWL Ebsworth are right on top of that. So, yes, a bank guarantee is the answer. Also, while we're talking about tenants, you want to know, once they're in there, if they are in default, what their eviction process is. Now, I know you don't really want to talk about it, but you want to know their procedure if they fall. I mean, a tenant is given a grace period. Yes, they're supposed to pay a month in advance, but generally they're given 14 days grace. But most good managing agents, if they're a week late, there's an automatically generated contact with them to prompt them. And there may be legitimate reasons why. I mean, someone might be on holidays. It's ideally, you set it up as a bank transfer into the agent's trust account. But some companies don't like that. They like to do the transfers each month. So you need to have a mechanism, or the agent that's managing the property for you needs to have a mechanism in place, so that if they're 5 days late, they get a certain prompt. If it ends up being a fortnight late, it's a firmer one. But it's not allowed to run 2 or 3 months behind before they're given a letter of demand, because you'll find the lease says that you actually can't take steps under the lease either to lock them out or to issue a writ for possession, unless you have taken certain steps. And one of those is to have a formal letter of demand. So it's important that the process is done and properly, and a good managing agent will have that process in place to make sure that the tenant just doesn't have a chance of getting that far behind. And then I suppose the next procedure is, as far as that's concerned, is their process for replacing the tenant, the marketing. How's that done? If it's residential property, sometimes they'll absorb a small amount of advertising. With commercial property, though, with a management agreement, there's all generally already an allowance made for advertising, agreed allowance made for advertising. So that, let's say you're overseas and the tenancy falls due, you might be able to access your emails and they'll advise you, but you don't have to run around organising things. They have authority in advance to expend up to a certain amount of money to find you a replacement tenant. If the tenant's in default, those funds can invariably be taken out of the bank guarantee, but you still have to take positive steps to find a replacement tenant. You just can't call up a bank guarantee and take all of it by way of lost rent if you haven't taken positive steps to find a replacement tenant and mitigate your loss, is what the legal term is known as, so that you have to be acting reasonably to be able to not have a challenge made as to your claim on the bank guarantee. So I know that's perhaps a little wider the question you asked, but these are things that you need to consider.
What about control and giving you feedback?
Yeah, well, obviously you want regular and detailed feedback. You want to know what's going on, and that, as we alluded to before, comes by way of monthly statements which should summarise the income and expenses and also your GST. Now, that should be regular, and you need to make sure they're understandable. And I say that because I remember we used a software package, and yes, it was okay for an accountant, but for a landlord, you had to have an orientation day to help them understand it. I mean, it was accurate and it was detailed, but it was indecipherable. And so we had to change that, and it was not an inexpensive exercise. So you want to be walked through that statement that you get at the end of each month to make sure it is digestible very quickly. You want to know also how they handle maintenance. Do they have maintenance staff, or do they subcontract out the work? And you want to make it clear also, and I know we've covered this in earlier podcasts, that you want them to know that the tradespeople that act on your property, you want them paid on time. You don't want, in other words, if they submit a bill, they don't want to wait the full month. They want to be paid on time. And so quite often what might be the best method is that you say to them, look, in the first month, hold back a certain amount of funds, keep it in your trust account, so that if any bills come in and the rent isn't there because it hasn't been collected because they've remitted on the 15th or whenever it is they send the money to you after the first of the month, and a bill comes in, that particular tradesperson who's been, you know, kind enough to act quickly and do the work on your property can be paid. And assuming the lease is structured with the tenant paying all outgoings, that will ultimately be recouped from the tenant. But you've got to remember that when you have an emergency, you want someone to act quickly. So if the tradesperson knows that doing work on your property guarantees that he or she will be paid forthwith, when a real emergency does arise, they'll drop everything and go there because they know that there's no delays, there's no risk of getting paid. And so it's important you set up that relationship with the agent and the tradesperson. Now, that tradesperson may work for other landlords as well, but you just want to make sure that when they're doing work for you, that they know they're going to get paid. As I mentioned, the software package, just make sure that management software is easily understood, because that can be a real issue with some of the larger property managers. It works for them, it works for their accountants, it might even work for your accountant, but you're the one that needs to understand month by month what's going on.
And how would you handle the aspect of fees?
Yeah, fees are interesting. Look, there's no hard and fast rule there. They will depend on the size of the property, where it is, what it is, and how many tenants might be involved. Now, you might have five properties spread over a geographic area, or you might have one property with five tenants. Now, that property with five tenants is a lot easier to manage than, as you can appreciate, than having them spread over a larger area. But as a general rule, your management fees will range between 3% of the gross collections, that's rent and outgoings, because the rent, even though the tenant pays it, the managing agent's got to collect them, the outgoings, and then make sure the bills are paid. So 3 to 5%. Now, if you've got talking about a small strata suite, which might only be, you know, I'm guessing, say, $25,000-$30,000. Look, it might be even 6%, because if you work out the arithmetic, 6% of $20,000, not a lot of money. So that's where it fits. But if you've got a whole floor tenancy, you're probably looking at 3.25%, maybe 3.5% of the gross rental. If you've got a whole building, you know, a significant building, well, it would probably be closer to 3%, because it's easier to manage five tenants in one spot. So it's not something I can really be definitive on, but it also depends on the age of the building, because if there's obviously going to be a lot more maintenance, there's larger common areas and things like that, it adds up. And generally, those management fees will not include letting fees. They will be in addition to the monthly management fee related to the rent for the new tenant incoming. And as I said, marketing fees are generally on top of that as well. So hopefully that gives you a pretty good understanding of, or an overview of, components and the areas in which you need to start to ask questions. And when you come across a good, competent property manager, you'll know that straight away.
Having heard all of that, I feel confident our listeners should now be well equipped to make the right choice. So, thank you, Chris.
Well, it was my pleasure.